for January the 20th, 2023, we talk about Neon White, Burnhouse Lane, The Last of Us TV series, and much more. Welcome to Level 443. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back. Just general. Welcome Everyone? Back, everybody here.
Oh, yeah. Wow, nice.
Well, welcome back, listeners. If you've been here before? I have cool news. We have the network has a producer now.
Ooh.
We hired Gwen. We hired Gwen. It's a big step. It's real cool. Yeah. So, man.
Does that mean you're now an adult?
I mean, I've been an adult for a while.
He's cool boss now.
I really don't like being. I guess I don't know. I don't like thinking of it that way. But mm-hmm. Yeah.
Please, Mr. Ross was my father.
Yeah, I've never heard.
Definitely, though. If your employees were going to unionize, now would be the time to do it, because it'll be a real easy vote of one person.
So this is huge. If you see her out in the community, congratulate her. It's going to be like just, I don't know, guys, and putting together the documents to like get her on board. I realized I did so much. There's so much that needs doing. Oh my God.
In finally hiring a producer, we realized we needed two producers.
Oh gosh. So that's my news. That's my big thing. Dennis, are we still going to hear swearing coming from your side? Not from you.
No. I think we're good. Jen has relented to my pinball mastery.
Is this the deadline or
no? Sundays? No, there is a lot of pinball left to be played.
Yeah.
So I can't remember if I mentioned it last week, but we've started up like a homebrew table of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the pseudo is video game stuff. So I'm very proud to be talking about it right now. where we just kind of picked a table just for us to compete on over the course of a week. We hung a little whiteboard next to the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been great. And now we've been playing pinball probably, I don't know, exponentially more than we were before. And we played plenty before.
Yeah.
But I came down to record and Jen was in the groove trying to beat my current score, on the table of the week. And nice. So she's like, I might be here a while. You go. I'll be quiet. Like the great thing about a digital pinball table is you can turn off the sound.
Yeah.
But per your mention, you can't turn off the Jen. which is funny. I'll out her here. She says, I always know I'm on a really good run when I start sweating.
Cool. Everybody has their own method.
Sure.
Do the kids ever come close at taking the high score or?
They do respectable. They are lagging behind right now. So I'm on top with 11 million in change. Jen is in the high tens. And then Milo has just over 1 million.
Is that just from 1 week or is that cumulative?
No, that's just from 1 week.
Okay.
It's, you know, every table is different. Like, you know, 10 million could be a huge score on one table and it could be like the first 10 seconds on another at all.
Yeah.
There's really, we need metric for pinball. Like we need pinball standardization of scores.
There's really, I mean, outside of the usual pinball score inflation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Absolutely. I'm very happy at least that there is only one zero that is always a zero on this table.
Yes.
Like you know when a score begins with the thousands, but there's no way to score less than 1,000 points. It just feels kind of weird.
It's like doing the gas is $3.99 and 9/10 of a cent kind of thing. Like I know what you're doing.
If you want to know the power of the oil lobby, just look at the only place that charges 9/10 of a cent.
Yeah, just wait till they start minting, 9/10 of a cent coins.
Yeah.
I think we're going the other way. Oh, inflation, everything. So that's my new voice, the right wing reactionary who was also Vincent D'Onofrio's character from Men in Black.
It is also slowly turning into an abomination, all the shadows over Innsmouth.
Yes.
I mean, like I said, that character from Men in Black.
do you have anything else going on besides the pinball wars?
No. The pinball wars are the hot topic. We're recovering from all being sick last week, and so pinball is like the most active that anyone feels like being.
Nice.
Yeah. But yeah, Jen, like I said, relented, and I am alone now. I probably will be playing in the background, just so you know. I gotta widen this advantage. A simple million points is not comfortable enough a lead. So
A gamer's day is never over.
Hey, I saw that bumper sticker too. Yeah. I'd rather you didn't, but I'm not there physically to stop you. Really, I'm powerless.
I don't know. I feel like now you just need, you can be like, no, I've got people.
Gwen, edit out Dennis. No.
Well, people. I've got person, but yeah. Still.
Yeah, your first edit job is this podcast where pinball noises are constantly going on in the background, and you need to edit each one individually out. Except there's an entire section where it's relevant to the jokes.
Yep.
So just to make your life a living hell off the bat.
Yeah. No notes. This is Dennis. I didn't want to haze you, but Dennis is has forced our hand, I guess. David, what's going on?
Not a whole heck of a lot. I'm pretty much in just hunker down until it gets warm mode. Mm. Like that is mm-hmm. basically where I'm at.
I gotcha. Yeah. Well, that'll happen relatively soon in Alabama, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, to be fair, it's not so much the warm as, or the temperature as it is like, it's never warm enough to be truly quote unquote warm, and it's dark, and you know, like it's everything.
Probably wet too. Like,
yeah,
can't do anything really where there's not a path or paving. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, this last week actually was got some fairly severe storms, although we did not get any of the tornadoes or anything. So
that's good. Yeah, well, what kind of monster would that be if I said rats?
Yeah, we didn't get any rats either.
Oh, remarkable!
Yeah,
well, that's because down there you have nutria.
Yeah, you probably did. You just didn't realize.
Oh, I mean that is rats. Very possible. No, I'm actually, so this is just going to be like, I know, my weird habits or whatever. You know, it being the American South, in the you know, in the summer you get at least some cockroaches.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And you know, partially just this being a fact of life and partially me being like a vile bachelor. Like mm-hmm. every so often you're cooking or something and like, I don't know, say like a cookie or something like, you know, falls down someplace and you don't notice until later, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be times when that happens. And I come back. And I'm like, oh, I know I was eating those cookies a week ago. But it's completely untouched, and really, I just feel kind of disappointed in the vermin.
Oh, is it? I mean, depending on the kind of cookie, you run into that where there's some food that the cats are really interested in, some food there's not, and I realize, oh, it's because it's like processed, like they do not recognize this substance as nutrients.
Oh no!
Still though, I feel like at some point I don't know. I guess I just feel like they're slacking, you know, like if you're going to invade my home and eat my food, like,
yeah, they could at least pitch in, you know,
right? Exactly.
Carry this cookie away. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Oh, well, Ben, how about you?
I'm going to deflect from myself and instead talk about how two people on the network got married this last week. So
I suppose you're right. Congratulations, Jala. And congratulations, Gary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think they planned it that way, but boy, that's how it worked out.
And to be clear, not to each other.
Yes. To their respective spouses.
Surprise twist of the century.
Yeah. Congratulations to both of them. I've seen pictures from both. Both look like lovely affairs. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's maybe a different word choice.
Yeah, I was going to let that one pass, but...
In the non... people know what I meant. Come on.
Point of language is to communicate and to make Cole's life hard.
It's just desserts. It's fine. So good deflection, Ben. Congratulations to them. Big week all around. Huge week. So I think we should do the show that we do. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And we can get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I'm going to do mine so it gets out of the way real quick. Also because it's new and it is one that I am excited about. I played a good portion of Burnhouse Lane. This is the new game from Harvester. They are the team that has made some of my favorite horror games over the past period of time or so. Weird how I say that. That's just a little macro. It's just a meme that I have when I'm, some of my favorite games. They did the Cat Lady. They did Lorelei. Just very good psychological horror games, and not like just in the way that like anything that name checks Silent Hill or Silent Hill 2 is a psychological horror game. Like, these are genuinely like excellent explorations of grief and depression and sickness and all these different kinds of things. It's real heavy subject matter. They've made me cry. This is a new one from them. So good.
I was gonna say, how does it compare to the previous entries?
It's pretty cool. There are some marked changes, but even people, so I streamed this, even people who tuned in, and didn't know the game by name, this is Burnhouse Lane, the new game from Harvester. Like, people would tune in and say like, wait, is this from the Cat Lady people? They've got this house style where it is 2D adventure games, with this real sweet, like mixed media, presentation to it. In the past it was more pixelated, but it has always been like just combination of levels of detail, things that are pulled in like photographically or altered to kind of fit the style or the color palette that they have. What's cool about this is they've really upped their game with the visual on it. But they did it in such a way that it is still recognizable with their animation style, this kind of puppet kind of thing that they have. Everything is real high detail and painterly, and everything has this really sweet, like light over it. Like, this is a weirdly psychedelic and colorful game for how bleak the subject matter is. And that subject matter. So the previous three games that they did, The Cat Lady, Downfall, and Lorelei, were kind of a rough trilogy. All of them related to this this eldritch god. I think she's like the queen of flies. I think. God, I forget her name.
Yelzebub.
I love these. Something like that. I need to actually find what this is. Somebody who, she is this kind of deity who seeks out sick people, who are near death, and offers them kind of a second chance, by sending them out after to kill people that, the god calls parasites. Siri.
She offers sick people a second chance in exchange for an unfair contract. So, you know, insurance companies.
Yeah, the queen of maggots. There we go. She is this this god of death. This started out as the Cat Lady 2, but they decided to take it in its own direction.
They realized that Cat Lady 2 would be an awful name.
Yes. this has kind of a similar vibe to it, and a bit of a similar setup. It may even be revealed that it's in the same universe, but it is not strictly related to the Queen of Maggots. So you play as this woman. Who is the game starts off, she is trying to hang herself. That is actually your tutorial for pushing something in the environment to get the chair in the right place, using your inventory. If it was any other developer, I would say, hey, that's a little too much. That's a little too hot for you to go right out the gate. Maybe it's handled respectfully. Partially because it fails. She's somebody who has been given 6 months to live because of a lung cancer diagnosis after losing her husband to terminal illness to cancer, shortly before this. So just 1-2 punch got her. She is a nurse who has been offered this job. This fails, and she picks up the phone, and it's somebody offering her this job to go out and take care of this older man out in the country. This is Britain, so everything is extremely British. You're out in the countryside.
Everything is out in the country.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, anything outside of London, am I right? I have no idea. I've never been there. but there are sheep and stuff wandering everywhere, used for comedy and stuff. But while there, she is kind of attracted to and stumbles through this door in the basement that takes her to kind of a purgatorial spot where the sick are gathered, called Burnhouse Lane. So even though she's out in the country, she passes through this Silent Hill horror scape in the basement and is taken to this purgatorial place where everything is real fucked up. It's like a depressed city.
I mean, as hellscapes in your basement tend to be.
Yes, yeah, but is quickly offered a similar deal to what the previous protagonists were offered, you set about trying to satisfy the terms of this while trying to stay alive, because the people that this being sends you after are dangerous. Hopefully getting out the other side with a cure for her condition, the second lease on life. So that's kind of the premise that you have here. Mechanically, this is more intricate than the previous ones, which were very standard, 2D graphic adventure games. Mechanically, you would go around, observe stuff in the environment, pick up things that you could pick up, and press the items together and see if they worked to solve the puzzles. In this, they have added not exactly stealth, but let's say like evasion kind of play, also some combat. And I was initially pretty put off by this idea, but so far it has not been that big of an issue, actually. So there will be the big nemesis kind of enemies that will come after you, and you have a little dash that you can do, and it's pretty transparent when it's going to work, but you will do it like this dash on this 2D plane as you're approaching them, and then dodge behind them. So you're not doing the thing that I'm real tired of in horror games, which is cower in the closet or under the bed until the enemy decides to walk away.
The most I don't know.
No, go ahead.
What? I was gonna say, I thought normally that was the opposite. You were a super big fan of Amnesia and not so much fans of the more action versions of Resident Evil.
No, I mean I enjoy both of those, And like in the past, you know, like amnesia. And
not saying this to like be accused of, I'm just surprised.
No, it's just like, you know, amnesia and Penumbra were real cool when they came out, and then everybody kept doing the same thing, and I got sick of seeing it. You know, I think that the straw that really broke the camel's back with that was Alien Isolation for me, actually, with the instant death and the just so much hiding, and there was no real indication when you were going to be seen, kind of stuff. Like, yeah, do something different, guys. Like,
we really had some cower creep.
Yes. Cower creep. Yeah. You know, like even Frictional moved off of that. Like, you don't really do the cowering thing in Soma, right? Like, you're trying to like get around this thing, but it's more about not being seen than anything. And like, you can run away. Like, you can get to a point where they're not going to keep coming after you. Yeah. So it's cool that they empower you with that to kind of get around. And yes, it is like a dexterity challenge, but like the fact that this is in 2D actually like simplifies it greatly to where it is more like a lock and a key kind of thing than it is, okay, here is a pervasive system that is overlaid on everything. Now, this could take a shit. You know, there could be a Scorn level bad boss that I end up going after, but for this studio, it's neat to see them evolve in this and to like not have it be an immediate kind of faceplant, right?
The visuals on this remind me a lot of This War of Mine.
Yeah. Except this War of Mine, like though that was 2D, everything's were done in 3D, like modeled environments, I think. Okay. So similar, I think, let's say Desolation and, yes. Let's say, yeah, Desolation is probably the way I would say it. Yeah. But it's cool. Like I got through the first two chapters, I think I think there are five of them, but I dig it quite a bit. And yeah, I really want to spread the word on this developer because they make really good games that feel like they are kind of hand tailored made for me, you know? And more people should know about them, please. And thank you.
Very cool.
Any questions about Burnhouse Lane?
No.
All right. Nice. Let's see here. Dennis, I want to hear about yours.
Yeah. So I picked up a new game this week that I've been absolutely loving called Neon White.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is it falls in a genre that I forever have been trying to get called the gun ballet genre, which is just kind of speed running centric FPS games. And Dead Core, I think was the first game that I found in that kind of vein. Lovely Planet is like that. Just in general, anything with that kind of Quake twitchy feel to the shooting, really, you know, can be turned into a gun ballet game. But, I'd heard that Neon White kind of had that flavor and had a card system on top of it to boot. And so I was like, all right, this has got to be for me. Like those two things combined means it's worth checking out. And so check it out. I did. This game is real fun, y'all. And the strongest vibe that I got coming off of it was that it was Trackmania for first person shooters. Just bite-sized levels, all about, you know, 20 seconds long, or maybe a little longer, so far. And really, really quick resets. It demands lots of precision going through. And the same kind of rewarding increase in mastery as you do those resets and get further and further towards not just doing the thing, but doing the thing really fast. So has anyone played this before? Oh, go ahead.
I haven't played it. I know two things about it. Is it was made by Ben Esposito, who I think made Donut Country, I think. And it's a kind of a very different stylistic game than that. And then also I've heard that there's a shortcut on every level.
Yes. What's interesting is they don't make it so arcane that the average person can't discover it. Now maybe there's a shortcut that isn't telegraphed, but basically, you know, you got your metal levels. So bronze, silver, gold, and then platinum. At the silver or gold level, I forget which one, it'll say like, you know, highlight route. And basically a little kind of floating icon will pop up where there's a big cut or a big way that you could go faster, just to kind of draw your attention to the right spot. So if you hadn't seen that before, usually leveraging that cut is the way to get all the way up to a platinum medal, which at that point, with the reward for getting a platinum medal is that it shows you the global leaderboards for that stage. And so it just like Trackmania now, you know, it's less about competing to get a medal and more about your rank against the world. So yeah, the gameplay is super tight, but I will say that the card-based system tag is a lie. And to some extent, I'm not mad about that, because anything that introduces RNG to a game that is about speedrunning will drive people wild. Like, that's the fastest way to ruin a game of that type.
Yes.
So while the like convention is picking up and playing cards as your weapons, there's no randomness to it, and they could have just as easily done like item slots, and it would have been fine. If there's something later on that plays with that, okay. But really, like, the card thing is misleading. And it was a surprisingly high amount of the dialogue I had seen about the game before playing it. It was like, oh yeah, there's a card-based system. No, it's just the your inventory slots present as a hand of cards. But every card, every weapon that you pick up has two functions. One is a fire, like a gun. So far I've seen like a handgun, an automatic rifle, or a sniper rifle. And then you can discard that gun, or, you know, drop it, to get a special movement based effect. So your handgun also functions as a double jump. Your auto gun functions as an area of effect attack. Your sniper rifle functions as a horizontal dash. And as long as you have just a few bullets left in your cartridge, you can use that and kind of really that's what it should be. It shouldn't be cards. It should be cartridges. You can discard that cartridge or card to get the movement effect. And that, once you layer that on top of switching between weapons, and just all the other movement stuff that's in the game in general, it gets really complex, really fast. Just how you can combo stuff together to move through the level faster than you ever thought possible.
Can you change the order of the cards, or are they like a queue? Is it like a fixed order?
No, you can swap between two weapons at any given time, but you cannot hold more than two weapon types at a time.
Okay.
And you always have access to a melee attack.
Okay. So like, but you can get more than two cards, but it just is only two types. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, you think you could be holding like three clips of sniper and one clip of a handgun.
And you can switch between which one you have of those.
Yeah. And so, you know, that means you have roughly, it's like eight-ish shots for your handgun. And if you fire that last shot, then you don't get the double jump, but you can fire all the way down to the last shot and still use it as a double jump, or at any point before you've emptied the magazine, kind of just get rid of that weapon as a movement technique.
Yeah. But then there might be levels where it's like you would need to switch to a sniper rifle, use that, and switch back to a double jump like at the end of the level or something like that, perhaps.
Yeah, and then combo that with the fact that some of the techniques, like the one for the automatic rifle and the one for the sniper rifle, can deal damage as well. And like discarding it to kill some, like you're still attacking with it. You're just attacking through movement. That also then the type of enemy you kill determines what weapon you get. So like the little grunt enemies drop the handguns, the big tough guys drop the sniper rifles, et cetera, et cetera. And so thinking through all that of like, okay, I'm going to sniper dash into this handgun guy, which gives me a double jump. I need to kill this guy on my right and then use the double jump to get up to, you know, and so on and so forth. So, it really, really flows and looks cool when you get it right. There's definitely a learning curve to like switching regular fire and then movement ability and just getting all this right. And I can't tell you the number of times in the early levels where it's like, okay, I want to jump and I fire the gun. that did not have the effect I wanted. Thankfully, like I said, all the levels are 20 seconds max, and you know, you can reset instantly. which is great.
No.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
There's an element of this that you haven't discussed yet that has been a bit of a sticking point to me. And my question is going to move you on to that probably. So I guess I will defer to others if they have mechanical questions.
I would say go for it.
Okay. Something that has kept me from going in on this, despite the fact that I've heard very, very good things, is that this is a game that is not mechanically a visual novel, that is extremely talky and has long sections that mimic that style.
Yes.
Also super horny.
Super stylistic in a horny variant of stylistic.
I'd heard it was like straight up dating sim mechanics.
Dennis, you've played Hades, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because if Hades is like a 5 on the Hornet meter, and 10, you know, 10 is just straight up a, you know, an H game, and mm-hmm. 1 is what's the least horny game?
The first Halo.
The Witness would be the least horny game. I was gonna say Tetris, but you do score the most points by sticking a long cylindrical thing into a very narrow lane. So Tetris would be a 2.
Yeah. So by your own scale, Hades would not be a 5. I would put Hades up at like a 7.
Okay.
At the least.
Not where I'm playing it.
how does it compare? I mean, that was a fun bit. How does it compare to Hades on that regard?
It's probably on par with Hades.
Okay.
Less so in the character design, but more so in the interactions.
Okay, so Hades does not have, I mean, outside of particular interactions that you can do that are explicitly dating simmy, like mm-hmm. the characters themselves don't necessarily, nobody's like really coming on to you unless you're asking for it. Is there a bunch of just unsolicited horniness directed at you?
Yes, very much so. Well, it's so funny. So you've got your protagonist, and I should talk about the story of the game since we're getting into the Visinov elements, because like you said, this is a very talky game, and I feel like I'm playing a visual novel, but I don't have any choices to make. I'm just along for the ride. So like cutscenes by way of Danganronpa, is how I would describe it.
Mm.
And Visinovs in general. So you have died and you show up in heaven, but you're not supposed to be there because you're a sinner. You should have gone to hell. But heaven, to take care of the occasional demon infestation, invites sinners up into the clouds to compete, to clean out demons, and whoever does the best job gets to stay.
Okay.
Until the next year where they do it all again. And so it's this yearly competition that you've found, and that neons are what they call sinners that have been brought in to do this.
Do they ever justify that choice? Cause that is like the most anime random naming ever.
No, not that I've seen yet. Although, you know, I've watched enough anime to know that that thing that seems just like a stylistic throwaway could have like earth-shattering plot implications.
Mm-hmm. Danganronpa 3.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out which one's Dang and which one's Rampa.
So you show up and all the people that you interact with seem to know you, and they're like, oh, hey, you're here. Like, when did that happen? What's all, you know, and they all remember you, but you have amnesia. You don't remember how you died, or who these people are. You kind of like vaguely recognize them.
All right. So I'm checking amnesia off of my visual novel bingo.
Yep. But you do feel a strong compulsion that you need to compete and win, in this cleansing thing. Anyway, so there's two women that are in your friend group. And it's like a Portrait of Dorian Gray situation in my mind, where one had all the anime horny put onto her so that the other could be like a normal functional character.
Okay. So there's like an average Hornet level that it needs to be maintained, mm-hmm. but you know, averages can exist with disparity. Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's the whole, you know, and she's
a horny seesaw, and it's completely on one side right now, it sounds like.
Yeah, and you know, it's the the voice and the over the topness and the, she wants you to teach her how to shoot and then pulls your arms around her. And then of course she's a complete badass and totally knows how to shoot already.
Right.
And so, you know, that all is going on. The other one, it seems like maybe you were actually like in a relationship with the normal one. It's violet and red, by the way. Everyone's neon color, right?
Okay.
So you're neon white, neon violet is the crazy anime girl. Neon red is the, like, she remembers you, you don't remember her, and she's very coy about what exactly the nature of your relationship was.
Hmm.
But by all intents and, or for all intents and purposes so far, seems like a normal human being. My favorite neon that you're friends with, though, is neon yellow, who is just your total dude bro.
Okay.
In the friendliest possible way. So another thing from the story, or like the setting that really amused me, is like you interact with angels in heaven, but your human mind can't comprehend what it's seeing, right? They're so out of your league and beyond human comprehension. And so you like just substitute something in, and mm-hmm. it's different for every person. So you see them as cartoon kitty cats.
Oh, fun.
And so just after the section where they explain to you, like you're talking to the angel that's giving you your mission, and you're like, I have to ask, I'm sorry, why are you a cat? And then he like explains, he's like, oh, that's what you see me as, huh? Well, your brain is breaking essentially and is substituting in something that you can comprehend. Mm-hmm. And right after that, you see Neon yelling. He's like, dude, how cool is it that John Cena is giving us missions?
Huh.
That's all you need to know to understand that character.
Right.
but yeah, so, you know, there's this friend group that, again, they seem to know what's up. You don't. But also, like, you were the last person to die, so they don't know exactly what happened with you because they all left ahead of time. The neon green is like the person that wins every year, and it's unclear if he is in your group or not. But everyone's scared of him, and that's the general thrust of the plot.
Yeah.
But yeah, you will get lots and lots of talking, lots and lots of I would say 90% of it has been voiced so far. And then there's like 10% that is like the and just like genericized barks.
Yeah.
Which is strange to me that they would get so far without, doing all of it. So I don't know. I don't know if it's like front loaded and maybe there will be less and less actual dialogue as I go along.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say it's unnecessary because people get different things out of games. But to me, you could not imagine. You couldn't conceptualize two things that were further apart than the hectic, very quick, very punchy, jumping kind of stuff. If you are there for that and the, you know, snack size track mania thing is your speed, literally, to slow down and hear about these people who might be fascinating to see in another ground. I don't know that I know the person who likes both of those at the same time. You might like both of them, but like one is always going to be getting in the way of the other for you.
100%. Yeah.
It seems like it does not seem like a wise shot to call to try and find the disparity to try and close the disparity between those to bridge that gap.
I think a similar reason I haven't played the game because of the puzzle and the like twitchy element of it. And those two feel at odds for me where it's like, if I'm playing a puzzle game, I would rather like take my time with it.
Yeah.
This is very much, nothing has been so puzzly as to like spend like puzzle. I'm trying to find the right words for it. It's not puzzly in terms of like a real head scratcher, a real thinker. But it is puzzly in terms of like, as I master these mechanics, I see cool new ways to use them.
Yeah.
And it feels like unlocking a puzzle, but I've never been like, okay, I just need to stand in this section of the level and kind of size it up for a little bit.
It's puzzly insofar as there are systems for you to determine how they interact with the different, the different cards and cartridges that you get. And less so like this is an impediment to my progress, that I need to cerebrally, figure out every
puzzling time. Puzzling at speed. Which, you know, maybe for, again, everyone gets different stuff from the game. That might drive some people mad where it's like, okay, I want to sit and dissect this level and I can't unless, like, you can't even get through some sections unless you're moving at top speed, right? So slowing down to think is death in a lot of situations. I have found, to your point about how the two parts of the game just don't talk to each other, they don't fit. I found myself being like, I want to play Neon White earlier. I should go in now and make sure I've gotten through all the cutscenes so I can actually play it.
Yeah. That's no good.
Yeah. That's not how you want to interact with this game. And no shade to the Visinov sections. Like, it's good writing. It's been enjoyable. But yeah, when I sit down, I generally have something that I'm sitting down for.
Yeah.
And that is almost never Visinov plus Trackmania.
Mm-hmm.
So
weird. Yeah. I just, you got your appetite, and when you're hungry for one thing and the other thing is standing there, like, okay, eat this. Well, then it's going to put me off. I'm not going to go to that restaurant anymore.
Yeah.
I've said not playing this, but like that is what has stopped me from kind of pursuing this one, despite the high praise that I've seen it get.
Yeah. Mm. Now some of it is shame on me, right? Because the start next mission button is at the top of the screen from the moment you show up in the talkie parts.
Oh.
And there's fairly heavy cutscene dialogue, but like I probably double the amount of time that I'm listening to audio and conversations because I compulsively need to go through and check on every person between every set of missions.
Okay.
So, you know, that is something you know, if you have the capacity to just skip large swaths of the game.
Yeah. I mean, that might not between every mission, mm-hmm. possibly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. Can I let it stack up and then go in and do all that stuff? Or like, if I do the mission, do I lose the dialogue forever? You know, is any of this going to be tied to skill stuff eventually? Because choosing the right gift for Neon Violet affecting my ability to put in fast times is going to be a real deal breaker. And I don't think they do that, but the worry that is possible is off-putting.
It's also precisely the kind of genre that would like shunt you onto a very long and worse path. Mm-hmm. That, you know, if you missed a flag somewhere, like, oh, you get the bad ending, which is, you know, like, all right, here's a whole different back third of the game. Have fun, chuckle fuck. You should have gone and talked to everybody.
Should have looked at a fact. I don't think they'll do that. And, you know, I don't want to come off as negative on it because I've really enjoyed my time with it. Like it's a tight, first person shooter speedrunning game and that's done very well. One little touch, just going back to mechanics for a second, that makes the game feel that much better is certain sections of the floor are like this watery blue material. Mm-hmm. And when you're on that, it's like you're on a conveyor belt that's going whatever direction you're moving. So it's a speed boost, but there's no sprint button in the game. Like you're always moving at the speed you're moving unless you're on this blue material, and then you speed up and there's like a whooshing sound to go with it. It just feels good to be on the blue material. So well done on that.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's Neon White. I'm a couple, the missions are like in sets of 10 ish missions. So I'm two or three of those in. Style out the wazoo. The two parts are done very well. They just don't talk to each other very, very elegantly.
Neon White.
Neon White. I have to do my DMZ wholesomeness check-in.
Okay. Call of Duty Warzone 2.0. BYOB.
Yeah. You know. BYOW, bring your own weapons.
I mean, do you have to?
You do. And if you die, you have to leave them there. So it's a whole thing. Continues to be a ton of fun. The most recent wholesome moment I had is I'm finally getting into the difficulty of missions that kind of require PvP.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about before, you know, needing to hunt a squad and they offed themselves without me in the area. So, oh, well. This one, I had to get kills in the mall. There's like a shopping center. That is a specific area, and I had to get kills specifically in that area, which is kind of annoying and grindy because like if no one else is there, what are you gonna do? But I go rolling up with my squad and I'm just talking to it like, yeah, let's stop off here. I gotta do the mission. And all of a sudden we hear, hey, we're doing the mission too. Can you guys wanna come up to the roof and we'll trade off? You can just down us and then we'll down you. And literally there was another squad up there that was just waiting for other people who had this mission. Hmm. We hopped up on the roof of the mall and then just took turns. One team would down one member of the other team and then wait for them to be arrived. And then we would down a member of the team that started with shooting and went back and forth, and then teamed up and played the rest of the mission together.
That's literally almost exactly like a few different people like showing up to the same, I don't know, orc camp in the East Commonlands at EverQuest and yep. being like, all right, both of us need the belt this asshole has. Like, I'll try this time and I'll help you and you get it. And mm-hmm. then next time it'll be me if it drops, but we will help you there. Like, mm-hmm. we're just going to take turns, like just the way that people organize themselves. This sounds exactly like that.
Oh yeah. And it's fantastic. Like that wholesomeness, or like, I remember, I'm sure this was in the original WoW as well, but when I dabbled in WoW Classic and the server was completely full, people would kind of like politely queue up to get their mobs.
Uh-huh.
So like the pigs or whatever that are in the horde's starting area that you need to kill, but they just don't spawn fast enough for the number of people in the area. Mm. You would literally just queue to like, okay, my turn for a pig, and you go get it. And then you get back in the line, like, very wholesome. Yeah. And that was great. And made even better by the fact that you can, you know, literally like officially team up with these people that just helped you, and, you know, play the rest of it out together. So it's just super cool. And people like using proximity chat to solve problems in creative ways.
Nice.
Like, absolutely love that. And you know, that's what makes DMZ so unique.
This is all very unexpected.
Very unexpected. Coming from Call of Duty, like, what the hell? The other thing just that happened today, the Tuesday of the week before this came out, was they did a DMZ tournament, which is the weirdest thing. When I read that they were doing it, it's officially sanctioned. There was a $30,000 prize pool, so like no small deal. But I was like, "What? How are you going to turn DMZ into a tournament? Like, isn't that just going to be Warzone? Like, isn't that just going to be a battle royale? Like, this is so dumb. Like, why would you do this?" And then I saw it, and it totally works. So the way they do it is everyone just queues into pub lobbies, like. You're not all versus each other, and you know, each team is just queuing into the regular list of games, and you have a set of missions just like you would have if you were dropping in, that are unique to the tournament. So one was like visit the airfield, the port, and this village all in one drop, or you know, take a high value target mission and complete it, and then use the key that it drops. Or, you know, stuff like this. So it was kind of like, you know, normal missions plus, but tailored to be difficult, for a single drop versus spread over multiple drops.
Mm.
And, they missions were worth either 1 point, 2 points, or 3 points, depending on how difficult they were. And your squad's goal when they dropped in was to complete as many of the missions in one drop as possible.
Okay.
And it was scored that way. Player kills were on the mission list. You got a point each for a player kill, but only your first two player kills got you points.
Huh.
So you could get 6 points from player kills if each member of your three-man squad killed two other players, but you had to spread it out that way. And then after that, it was actively bad to go hunting other players or engaging with other players, because that's going to use up a lot more of your resources for no points.
Right.
So just super cool that, like, so, you know, they weren't ignoring other players or hiding from other players, but also like that, you know, engaging really only worked up to about the point that you would naturally find players in a drop.
Hmm.
So it almost encouraged people to play normally.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, I can't believe that they found a tournament format that actually feels like playing DMZ. And that was really, really cool. There was even, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did catch part of a stream where someone talked their way out of having their squad wiped. where, like, the, you know, first teammate went down, second teammate went down to just randoms, you know, that they were in their lobby. And the guy's like up on the roof. He's like, hey, guy, like we're in a tournament. Can you please just, I just want to res my friends. I will drop all my cash. You guys, basically what I did to that other guy, if you remember, way back in the beginning. But
when you did it, it was a joke.
Yeah. This, he's like offering it up. He's like, I will drop all my cash. You just take it and go. I just want to get my friends up.
Yeah.
Didn't quite work out, but he like lived, but they still shot at him when he was flying away. So
worth an attempt.
Yeah. The fact that even that conversation happened was astounding to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, just really, really cool. It's interesting. Like if they keep on doing this and people start becoming familiar with the idea of like, oh, it's a DMD tournament that you're in. I could see a situation where it's like, hey, let's all help the tournament people. And like some kind of,
oh, up. You sweet child. Yeah.
Such a positive outlook.
Hey, I mean, I have a wholesome story from DMZ every week that we talk. Yeah. So
people surprise you.
It's possible. But yeah, so the tournament format worked really well in a way that I never thought it would. And I don't know if it's going to be a regular thing. It felt like it was kind of more just an experiment to promote the mode. But it was really, really cool to watch.
Hmm.
And that's me this week.
Nice. Good to hear. Ben, I want to hear about yours.
Yeah, I got two and one doesn't really count. But the first one is a game that I think Dennis might have played before. I started playing Griftlands.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Are people familiar with this?
No, I'm not familiar, I don't think.
Okay.
I don't think it's been discussed before.
Right. One of my favorite like Let's Plays to watch.
Okay. So this is a game I got to try and scratch the Slay the Spire itch. It is a deck builder. The kind of twist on it is that there's two decks that you manage. You have a fighting deck and you have a like conversational deck. But they're both functionally doing the same thing where you're trying to win at both things and like attack with both things. But each deck will have like a different mechanic. There's, I guess, similar to Slay the Spire, there's three different characters you play on. The thing that's notably different about this one than Slay the Spire is that there's like a storyline with it where it's like the three different characters. There's like a narrative aspect that you're going through. And so like each day is a different day and that you go through. There's a day night cycle and stuff. You're progressing like narrative with the missions you're doing. So it's not just like a map with random encounters that are kind of independent from one another. That said, Slay the Spire is still probably a better game, but this one, it's interesting. You have this weird thing where it's like, depending upon what encounter you have, some of them you have a choice where you can try and like talk it out or fight it out, and then that basically is going to lean on whichever deck you'll be able to upgrade whichever deck you're using in that case. So there's this kind of weird dilemma where it's like, well, I can perpetually make, you know, this one deck a lot better. It's kind of like a Pokemon problem sort of thing where it's like, I put all my eggs in this one basket, but then if I'm ever put in a situation where I can't use that, then I'm kind of screwed. And similarly, it's, for a given character, like one deck might have a more fun mechanic, like the conversational deck might be more interesting than the battle deck. So you kind of have to, or kind of forced to use something that you might not be as interested in, to try and make it long-term. I'm going to look up real quick who this is, what else the company that made this has also made. It's KLEI.
It's Clay. So they did, Oxygen Not Included and Don't Starve kind of most recently, but they go way back. Like this is the company that did, like Mark of the Ninja. Shank, I think as well. Yeah.
By the way, I remember the game that is making you think that I've played this because it was also a game, deck building game about conversations.
Which one? I cannot
for the life of me remember what it was.
Okay.
The name is eluding me. I'm Googling furiously. But yeah, that was much more like each card was kind of an abstraction of a conversation, and
yeah,
it was more of a matching game than a like deck building game. Proper. Gotcha. This feels a lot closer to Slay the Spire.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and some of the cards will make sense. Like there's a card called Ad Hominem where I think it makes all of your arguments safe, but then there's like a decay that it does. So it's like the mechanics try and match like whatever you're saying. So there's some cuteness factor there. And there's some long-term meta progression. So it's like a bit of a roguelike, like similar to Slay the Spire, new cards will get unlocked as you do subsequent runs. You get like experience and unlock new cards with it. And then also there's like long-term, like a perk tech tree that you can unlock where your character can start out with that. And you can, to make it easier to do run-throughs. It's an interesting game. I don't know if I would go ahead and say that it's like great or necessarily worth your time. If you're someone who's really into deck builder games, then it's kind of interesting. The kind of downside with the narrative part, it is like, I do appreciate that it's there. However, if you're playing like subsequent run-throughs with the same character, to their credit, they do mix up the narrative where it's like the encounters are randomized. So I haven't like seen like the same sort of situation twice necessarily. Mm. There are certain parts that are the same. Like you have kind of like the same home base for each character, and like a person that is kind of like your Sherpa or whatever will be the same from run to run. But the randomized encounters you run into and like the missions you do are slightly different run to run. So that part is good. However, like once you kind of get a gist for what the story is, it kind of is more getting in the way on subsequent run-throughs, where it's like, if you were to play this game on like the 100th time, the story would just be purely in the way and like you'd want to skip past it. They offer a mode where like it's like an easy mode where it's more to experience the story of the character and not the game mechanics as much. It's like an easy mode. I wish they had something that was like the opposite, where it's like, you can just play the game. Like, we won't interrupt with like the narrative stuff.
Right.
But yeah, overall it's interesting. I don't know, like B or C tier, I guess, for deck building games. So again, it's like, I'd recommend it if somebody was like really interested in those types of games, but if they're not, there's probably better things to play, like Slay the Spire.
But just how depressing is it that like the one card game that came near to scratching the itch for you, the Slay the Spire itch, got bought by FTX.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Like, Fairy Tale Brawl, like, you know.
Storybook Brawl,
yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. Rip, yeah. So, that's a shame. That's a shame that they did that violence again, Cole.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, to distract you, Signs of the Sojourner was the game that I had played.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, it's, I mean, there's other auto battlers and stuff out there, but yeah. You know, it would be nice. I got Marvel Snap, right? I got my thing to sink time into, I guess, which by the way, I hit like platinum today, or platinum or diamond, whichever one's higher.
I assume that's good.
Yes. I don't know.
It's right below intervention tier.
I don't know. I haven't talked about that game, but that game still is fun and takes up a little bit of time, but I still haven't put any money into it, so I'm proud about that.
Nice.
All right, I'm going to move on if there's no questions about Grifflands. The last thing I wanted to talk about, which I was going to smuggle into the conversation here, is I was going to talk about The Last of Us on HBO, even though it is a show and not a video game. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I had intended to watch it before this episode and then work. So okay. I want to hear about it.
I will give a spoilerish free episode. There's one scene that's like halfway in the show that I would like to talk about as an example of them elevating the writing of the game. But it's not like a major plot point spoiler, if that's okay to spoil that aspect of the show.
That's the first episode of the show. Yeah.
All right. Okay, so I want to talk about this. They've only released one episode. I kind of found this out over the weekend when I went to watch it. I thought I was going to like start binging, but they're just doing one episode a week since it's HBO and not like Netflix. So this will be going on like into March probably, because I think they have like, I don't know, 8 to 12 episodes. I forget how many exactly. But the first episode, if you've played the game, goes from the prologue of the game to their first night in Boston when the two main characters have met one another essentially. Okay. So that's kind of like what the episode goes through. So just off the bat, I thought it was really good. I was impressed by it. I kind of had like reserved expectations for it. I think the news story last week we talked about was that it had good reviews or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I was impressed by it because basically if you could condense the show down, it's like they stick to the game and a good amount of it and keep like that good story there. But the parts where they depart from the video game, they actually elevate the narrative and actually do better than like what the game has in it, which is really impressive for me, I guess. So I think usually it goes the other way where it's like, I think people are like afraid of sticking like close to the source material because it seems like, I don't know for whatever reason. But then usually they try and do their own thing and it's like a lot worse. So an example in each direction. So, you know, the show, much like the game, opens up with, you know, them being in Texas and kind of seeing the downfall of society, that sort of thing. Literally, like, shot for shot, there's something that's just like in the video game where they're driving. There's a group of people with their car broken down on the side of the road. And I forget what's the uncle's name, but Joel's brother is like, oh, we should stop and help him. And Joel's like, nope, we got to keep moving on. The next person might help him, you know, and says it very coldly. That's like
kind of his establishing moment, actually.
Yeah.
When you know what his speed's going to be.
Yeah. And so that's like one to one with the video game. It's like, I don't have a qualm with that. It's like, that's an effective writing. That's good writing.
It's for a memorable. Yeah. It's good. It's like the standout part of the game for a lot of people.
Yeah. And it's like for somebody who hasn't played the game, that's going to hit just as hard as like the first time you played the game. Totally okay with that. Like, I don't have any problems with that, even though I wasn't like surprised by that aspect of it or anything. Fast forward, a scene that I was very, very impressed by with this is there's a scene when they're introducing the city of Boston, where they show like a child character walking towards the city wall and like collapsing right outside of the wall. And they basically show the protocol of like bringing someone into the city. And so they have him strapped in a chair. They're talking to him, you know, police officers like talking to him, and they're like, okay, like, how did you get this like mark on your knee? And then what they do is they have a scanner, like which they have in the video game. They scan him. And then afterwards, the officer seems much more relieved and friendly and says, okay, we're going to get you some food. Like, you're going to be okay. We're going to give you this shot to clear up like these other things, and then you're going to be good to go. The part that was so good about the writing of the scene is that it could have gone either way. You see what the light shows up when they scan the person, but you don't know what that means. Like, you don't know if green is like all clear or if green is, oh, positive for the virus. Or vice versa. You don't know if red means, oh shit, they're infected, or red is like negative for the virus. And so it's this point of ambiguity where it's like, okay, so I don't know what's happening here. Like, either that's a good or bad thing. But then towards the end of the show, it gets to the part of the game where you scan Ellie and they figure out that Ellie is like infected or whatever. And so there's a payoff with that scanning where it's like, okay, because of what that color showed up for her, that retroactively shows what that earlier scene meant.
And, oh, like, so the shot that he got was killing him?
You can watch the show and figure that out. But there's that ambiguity where it's like, are these people like friendly as they're murdering someone, or are they like going through legitimate protocol, but seem scared or whatever.
That's the cool thing that I want to see out of this is just show me a little bit more about how society works in this.
Yeah.
You know, like you in the game, it, for obvious reasons, it mechanically, you spend a lot of time in abandoned spaces. It just the ruins of what was, right? But I like, you really, it's blink and you miss it in Boston. And I wanted to know a little bit more about how that police state worked. I want to see a little bit more of like the intervening detail for what life is like in this. And like, that's one of the cool things about the opening of Last of Us 2, right? Spending the time in Jackson and seeing what they set up, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes the emotional core of, you know, Ellie's position so much more resonant, that like you see something that could theoretically be clawed back to something that looks like normal, you know? Whereas in the game, it's, you know, the level says move forward. So that's you know, is a strong motivating factor in the show, you know, showing the audience that, okay, like, yeah, I sure it's dysfunctional in a police state and terrible in a lot of ways, but I could see this if the zombie plague went away, getting Claude back to a life that was worth fighting for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the other compliment I'll give to the show is they do a good job of kind of combining a couple different scenes into singular scenes just to kind of speed it along, I guess, but without losing like the emotional impact or anything. Like, they kind of smartly do it in a couple places. And then the other part that's really nice is like, man, a close up in a TV show of like a person who's infected is so much more effective than like, you know, the kind of like the brute in the video game that just runs at you and like slaps you a couple times and you shoot them, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's so much more effective when you see like the sort of details and kind of like the gruesomeness of it that you don't, doesn't really translate as well from the video game. Mm-hmm. So I think they leveraged that in a few places. So
how's
you mean they don't have Joel's health bar on screen?
Yeah, exactly. He's not just bandaging himself up every 5 minutes. Yeah.
How's the casting? How's Pedro Pascal do? How do the others do?
I didn't feel like one way or another. I mean, I thought I was completely fine with it. Mm-hmm. I the child actor, what's her name? Is it Bella Thorne or is that somebody else? Or I don't.
That sounds right.
Okay. I haven't
Bella Fleck in the Flecktones. Fleck in the Flecktones is hyphenated.
What are you talking? What?
I'm making a dumb joke. It's fine.
I haven't really followed a lot of these actors or actresses very much. So like, I don't have any previous experience with them. They all seem to do fine. Like, I didn't notice any like bad acting or anything. But I'm also not like an expert on evaluating that sort of thing. So, no.
Bella Ramsey.
Ramsey. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, thumbs up for that show. That's all I got.
Neat. Cool. So that's all you had?
Yep.
Grifflands and the Last of Us TV series. David, how about you?
Not a whole heck of a lot. I've been continuing on with Citizen Sleeper.
Cool.
Which continues to be amazing and amazingly written. Man, the only problem is, in a game that's just straight up story, I'm not sure quite what I can say without it being spoiler.
I mean, focus like mechanics and stuff.
How,
like,
far into the city are you, I guess? That's like a way to...
I have not made it. I'm still in the starting area. Okay. I'm trying to disable my tracker. Mm-hmm. And I had a falling out with the first character you meet.
Okay.
So that's why it's a game, honestly, I'm finding difficult to play for long periods of time just because, you know, it's something, the writing is good enough that I care about paying attention to it. And then also, you know, there's a fair amount of like, you know, emotional and, you know, aspects to it. So it's something where I'm very much playing in short bursts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that definitely slows things down.
Yeah.
How are you feeling with like the die rolling mechanics of the game? Because it's like, it kind of has a similar thing to XCOM where it's like you're kind of starting out at a deficit, but you're like slowly building up ground. Do you feel that at all? Or
yeah, to a degree. So I got very low health, I forget what they call it, condition before initially getting healed for the first time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I've pretty much been able to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing I found that's interesting and that I hadn't necessarily considered going in is it's really interesting that if you have, I think your max die roll is what, is it 6, I think?
Yeah.
That is a automatic success. And I find, like, if you have, you know, say, like, five-ish dies, if you're in pretty good condition, there's a, well, I mean, law of averages is, I guess, you have at least one that's, like, five or better. Mm-hmm. And so that means that you can selectively choose things each day to automatically succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is real interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like the main gameplay mechanic.
Yeah, yeah. So other than that, I'm just kind of focusing on, you know, unlocking as many things as I can. You know, it's kind of interesting that, you know, most of the time you're assigning dice, but then there's places where you basically just, you know, buy your way into things. So, like, you know, one of the early things was, you know, becoming a regular at the bar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just have to buy a lot of drinks.
Yeah.
Get to buy a lot of drinks.
I mean, you can't get drunk, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm interested to see how much the replayability there is, because there's definitely a lot of, you know, dialogue choices that are mutually exclusive. But it's not clear to me, partially because, you know, I'm only playing it for the first time, to what degree it all gets you to the same end.
I don't know. The thing that I understand about it is, like, it is meant, you know, your choices are meant to be, you know, mutually exclusive, send you into, you know, different possibilities where that other one, you can't get to it, just by way of making it your experience. Mm-hmm. I believe that, like, you could play through multiple times, but it's also one of those things where, I don't know, do you want to?
Sure.
Kind of deal. Mm-hmm. But I haven't played this, so I don't know. Ben, you can probably...
Yeah, you can make changes in the game, you can make choices in the game that, like, will have an effect, but I think by and large what it is, like, you know, you can ally with some people and betray some people, that sort of thing. It's like the betray people will, like, leave forever and the ally people will stick around. And I think that's, like, about as deep as the choices go, unfortunately. But
yeah, I think some of the interesting ones are, there's a bunch of them where the alternate choices, I guess, effectively don't matter. Mm-hmm. In as much as, you know, there's ones where it's just like, you know, what do you want to have a conversation about? Or, you know, yeah, you know, those sorts of things where it's, I don't know, much more, it seems like it's much more just kind of choose your flavor type of things.
Mm-hmm.
And also with some of those, I'd be interested to know how much, it reads into your responses to NPCs. Cause there's some times where you'll have several, you know, options for what you say, and they seem like pretty narrow, differences.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just things where it's like, you know, this is the right thing to do, like, this is the right thing to do, but, and that would literally be like, you know, it's just you saying the same thing, but then equivocating, or you saying the opposite. It's like, that middle one, I'm not quite sure where they're going with it, you know?
Yeah, and so it's like, all right, in games like this, there are like macro choices and micro choices. You know, right. Think about the first season of The Walking Dead, where it's like, okay, this, I'm literally choosing who is going to live or die at this point in an episode, you know, but like I'm making smaller choices the entire way, where like it's mostly role playing is a bad way to put it, but I, you know, am, you know, picking how my character is going to be and what their posture is in the world. And what you don't know is, like, are there meters that are being affected by the inputs that I'm giving this, even if right, broadly, you know, the story is going to continue moving to hit the same, you know, the right beats.
Well, they right, telegraph exactly, it in that game, right? Because they'll be like, so-and-so will remember that.
Yeah, yeah. But also, like, that was some fiction too. Like, so and so will remember that, but that doesn't necessarily, like, they threw false positives on that all the time to keep you guessing, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember that, Cole.
No, okay.
But yeah, other than that, there's a bunch of I guess pseudo dream sequences that are kind of interesting. That are some pretty significantly different in tone than a lot of the rest of it. So I'm kind of interested to see where they go with that.
Mm-hmm. Are they all just about electric sheep, or
have you started? Because I think this happens like earlier in the game, is you start to notice there's different like nodes that have different rules for what like a successful die is, and that kind of starts opening up the strategy of like it's not just as simple as like okay, where are my sixes and which ones do I want to pass sort of thing. You can start to be like okay, I might put my low numbers here, my mid numbers here, my high numbers here, and start to have kind of more interesting thought about that. Have you gotten to that part of it?
Yeah, so I've gotten to the ones where they require either a specific die or like one of, you know, several specific roles.
Mm-hmm.
I've also seen, you know, there's repeatable and not repeatable ones. And then I've seen there's like dangerous and not dangerous or safe and dangerous, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That last one, I feel like maybe isn't the best. Telegraphed isn't the right word. Like, I vaguely understand, like, that, you know, negative actions versus positive actions, but it doesn't seem to be clear enough differences that I've been able to really make informed decisions about it, if that makes sense.
Hmm.
Like, I know, the bad effects don't seem bad enough, at least so far, that I can really tell, like, oh, like, I might want to be careful, you know, particularly careful not to spend, like, low dice in this. I don't know. It's...
I mean,
that's a weird thing, but...
It seems like it's a game that trades on that uncertainty too. Like you're just kind of not supposed to know. You know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, and like I said, it is kind of weird with the, you know, fact that you know, a lot of times can just have automatic successes that you, a lot of the time, you know, most of the time, at least at this point in the game, you're kind of making very, very incremental progress and, you know, doing a lot of grunt work, stuff like that, which is weird because then there's other instances where you can just kind of automatically succeed at something that ostensibly should be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's... There's a scenario fairly early on where you're trying to repair someone's ship, and you can either, you know, just spend a ton of rolls just actually repairing it, or just you know, have a one-time try on a very difficult check to basically repair its self-repair system.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, you can just choose to spend, you know, one of your sixes on that and automatically succeed, which, I don't know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's just unusual. It feels weird to, like, every so often just kind of be hyper-competent.
I mean, it's weird to be able to deploy it whenever you want to, right. But also there's trade-offs for any of those. Like, oh, that's a six I don't get to use anywhere else, and like, oh, I really need energy or repair, so, you know, I've got to spend that six there, which means that to me makes sense and is a little bit more satisfying than if it was just a straight roll.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I'm none of this I'm saying necessarily negative, just, you know, it's interesting.
I think they try and mitigate it a little bit with like the RPG stuff that they have under the hood, where it's like for certain things, it's like you might get +2 if you have, you know, this type of trait or this attribute, right?
Right. That's true. Yeah, no, that's definitely the case.
But yeah, it is. There, I guess to my knowledge, there aren't tasks that you can't win with a 6. So that is kind of weird. But then I don't, maybe then they shouldn't be optional options for task, I guess. I don't know.
No. I know. It also doesn't seem like a game that was super concerned about being difficult.
Yeah. I think if I remember like my review when I played it is like the first half of the game was really interesting, but you kind of hit an escape velocity after a while, and then it's like there's not a challenge anymore. And sure. Then it's just the story, which is good, but
yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I do kind of like from the story is their mixture of to what degree do they have, present you as being, very standardly, robotic versus to what degree are you depicted as being more of a, I guess, kind of a synthetic human, for lack of a better way to say it. And it seems like the one they go, what they come down to, which, seems fairly unique, is that, you're explicitly robotic, but for some reason, built with, significant sensor systems that allow you to end up with some of the same, results. So for example, you apparently can metabolize food, and eating foods that are too hot will too spicy will basically like overwhelm the chemo sensors in your tongue, for lack of a better word. And so you can't, you functionally equivalent to, can experience spicy foods, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And then they're just like, so what distinction does that make? And is it different from actual humanity? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So there's a lot of things where it's interesting, it makes, interesting distinctions of like, you can't feel pain. However, your system does let you know when you're being injured, just things like that. Like it's interesting. Kind of comes up with kind of nuanced, middle of the road, answers to a lot of those questions in a way that doesn't feel like some sort of like cop out enlightened centrism type thing. You can't get drunk. However, you can, experience, I guess, emotional reactions to to the experience of drinking in a pub, just things like that.
Yeah, cool sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, exactly, which is basically what this game is. That in anti-capitalism,
of course. Yeah, I should be playing this game now, actually, but Subnautica was calling my name.
Ran out of dice to allocate.
I failed. I just really needed to start Subnautica for a while.
Have you played Subnautica before?
I played like the first few hours of it, but
So you didn't get to the good part.
Right. No, I'm at the good part now. I played like 2 hours of it way back when, and I knew it was going to be trouble.
I would argue the entire game is the good part.
Well, yes, the entire game. I mean, like the especially cool things that start happening. Yeah.
See, for me, the game starts once you start getting vehicles, like significant vehicles.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, I just do it. We're doing, I mean, the second game I'm off this month is Citizen Sleeper, and the third game, the premium one, is Subnautica. And nice. I have justified it to myself by saying, I'm just getting the first part of Subnautica out of the way so I can focus on Citizen Sleeper. Even though I know I'm going to love both of these games.
So. Yeah. I'm interested to see what you think of some of the like backstory elements of Subnautica, just because they're interesting but kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, I'm down to see it at the very least.
Yeah.
I am envious that you're playing that game for the first time.
I know.
That's good. Do yourself a favor and wait like a couple of years before playing Below Zero so that it's kind of similar to playing the game for the first time again.
Yes, I'm probably going to do that.
Is Below Zero good?
It's like playing Subnautica. It's same thing as God of War. It's like, oh, do I want to try and like fake play this game for the first time again? And
and also, who am I fooling?
Yeah. But it's not like playing modern God of War and then going back to classic God of War.
No, that is very different. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't clear. Like, was saying it's like God of War, was that a good thing or a bad thing? I now understand.
Yeah, let me clarify. It's like playing Ragnarok after playing 2018 version, where it's like, this is the same game, different package kind of, but it's a nice reminder of how good that first experience was.
It's an iteration. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you have anything else besides Citizen Sleeper?
Nope.
Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Hey, Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to know about your gaming. Black sheep is the wrong word, but, you know, odd kids out that you still love oh so much. So is there a game that you love that completely goes against your usual type? What game is it and how did it sneak into your heart?
Yeah. I'll get started. Here is Jeremy, who says, Machinarium. I was never drawn to any point-and-click adventure games, but the puzzles and the music of this game are just perfect. A must-play for all. Hard agree, Jeremy. God, man, Machinarium is a triumph. Love that game.
It's my my PlayStation avatar. The only time I've bought an avatar.
It's a good avatar. It's a cute little guy. let's see here. David, what does Callum say?
Callum says, Call of Duty Black Ops. Haven't really enjoyed any of the modern Call of Duty games. Noting I don't enjoy multiplayer at all. The Cold War conspiracy fiction, though, was very much my jam. Yeah, I mean, Black Ops is basically what if Call of Duty had good plot.
Ben?
I'm purposely remaining silent here.
No, Ben, what does Peter say?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Peter says Mega Man X, just the whole series. I'm generally not a platformer gamer, but there's just something about Mega Man X series that draws me into that game.
Because they're really, really good. Man, Mega Man X is good. Sorry, people are just naming really good games.
Basically, the through line that we're finding is be outstanding enough that it doesn't matter what genre you're usually into.
Pretty much.
Yeah, quality transcends. Dennis, what does Noah say?
Noah says, Guilty Gear Strive. It's the only fighting game I play, and I was never really into them before. But I heard it's a good entry point for beginners to the genre, and I would agree with that assessment. The soundtrack is absolutely incredible, the animations are amazing, and the whole thing bleeds rock and roll swagger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was racking my brain being like, what's the one fighting game that I actually enjoy? Because I was like, that would be it if I could think of one, and I couldn't think of one. So maybe I need to go try Guilty Gear Strive.
Yeah. That style matters. Style matters. Greg says, I'm not really a big FTS fan. I don't know what FTS is. Maybe we'll find out.
Faster than sound.
Oh, RTS. No, he's talking about Command & Conquer. Okay.
Oh.
I'm not really a big RTS fan. I tend to find most of them very confusing, hard to manage, and difficult for me, as I prefer to do games turn-based so I can think about what I am doing. However, two series have some serious nostalgia for me, and I enjoy them despite my aversion of the genre. Command & Conquer was my first CD-ROM game and had a story that made me want to keep playing. And Homeworld is just so pretty to look at and does realistic space combat with true 3D cameras and movement. Yeah, Homeworld's neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like to imagine he was talking about FTS First Touch Soccer.
Okay. Any other things pop up on that Google search?
There's a First Touch Games, but I'm imagining that's First Touch Soccer.
No,
that's as far as that goes.
I keep hoping that the gaming world or whatever will rediscover Command & Conquer, particularly because that's one of those games I look back, I'm like, wait, was the storyline in those games as weird as I remember them being in retrospect?
It definitely got there. Oh, man. David, what does Sean say?
Sean says, Returnal. I'm not a huge fan of roguelike or bullet hell games, but together is this gorgeous and addictive sci-fi game. I was absolutely hooked. Have the platinum for it, and it's easily my favorite PS5 game.
They kind of smuggle the bullet hell in there. You don't know it's a bullet hell game until you're pretty far into it, I think.
You're like, there's a hell of a lot of bullets.
A lot of patterns, mostly seeking safe zones. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's totally a bullet hell. Yeah. Especially the bosses. Ben, what does Eli say?
Eli says, Stardew Valley. I'm usually more action-focused in my gaming. Even when I go outside, I don't care for Animal Crossing or your Create the Perfect Machine games. But I don't know. Maybe Pelican Town is just small or big enough for me to sink 30 hours into every 6 months or so. Or maybe the characters are just written, maybe even underwritten enough.
30 hours. So you're just dabbling, I see. they're talking about a 1.6, and I don't know if I can handle it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. 1.5 was real substantial. Who knows? And Dennis, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, despite my deep antipathy for roguelikes, I was able to enjoy Hades. Hey, it came up earlier. It was fun, gave out story content at a good pace, and ended up with a good level of challenge. There's nothing that fills me with a joyless rage faster than dying to the end boss after an hour plus run and having wasted my time. Looking at you, Returnal. enabling God mode and killing myself about 20 times for the added damage resistance made the game easy enough to enjoy safely.
Yeah. That's going to be pretty close to mine, actually. Not Hades. I have my problems with Hades. While still generally enjoying the way that it felt in my hands. People can listen to that. It's the premium WAF coming out this week, actually. Cool. It's already out. As far as roguelikes and stuff go, and even like card games, I enjoy a card game. I liked the Pokemon card game for the Game Boy, right? It's good.
Oh, that was great.
Good ass game. generally don't go in. Not a Slay the Spire guy, not a roguelike guy in general. But man, Monster Train is so good. You know, and I've talked in the past, and you can listen to the Watch Out for Fireballs about it, but like, yeah, that is the one that gets me over the hump on both of those regards. Monster Train is mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool.
David.
Man, this is a tough one. I'd say maybe Gone Home for like walking simulators, which that would probably be mine.
It really stands out because of the exploration kind of deal. Yeah. It is more than just getting through a space. It's about, you know, getting into a space. Yeah. Ben.
I think Souls-like games are usually ones that I kind of bounce off of, but Dark Souls, I really enjoyed playing that this last year.
Nice.
But I think it was the coming at it at the right approach and then mixed with the deep lore and just a lot of the game design decisions is kind of what won it over for me. So
I forget, did you play Elden Ring or Dark Souls first?
I played Dark Souls first. I played Elden Ring later, like 2 months after it came out, I think.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember the sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, for me, there will be no surprise here. I think DMZ has snuck its way into my heart, getting me back into Call of Duty, which I have not played, I think, at all since literally the original Modern Warfare 2. Like, I did none of the Black Ops games, nothing on modern platforms. This is the first and only one I've played in so long.
You only play Modern Warfare 2 from them, it sounds
So then it's going to be a while till the next Modern Warfare 2.
I give it another 10 years, probably.
See you in the next decade.
Mm. Nice. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this. There's going to be a slight change. So we're not moving away from Facebook, unfortunately. Still haven't found the proper replacement for it. However, I hate using Facebook pages. Not everybody sees the post for this when it goes up, because Facebook wants to pay you for that, or wants you to pay for that. If they paid you for that, that'd be crazy. Yeah. And also we had just a ton of pages, not doing a good job of managing them all. Created just a consolidated Facebook group called Duckfeed Community. If you do a search for that, you can find it on Facebook, just Duckfeed Community. You can join that. We're going to try posting the call for responses there for the next while. So just Duckfeed Community is where you want to go.
And I imagine we will link to it on the page.
Yes.
For like a week or two, just to show people, make it easy for you to get there.
Yes. If they see that post, if it decides to show it to them.
Well, yeah, there is that.
Yeah. The end boss. All right. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games, usually that are exciting to us, but we're really failing in that remit because last week was a bummer. We got some bummers this time. I'm going to structure it so we don't end on one. hey, Ben, what kind of piece of shit is
I don't know how to answer until you give more information in that sentence, but
yeah. What kind of piece of shit is Justin Roiland?
There's two things that happened this last week that both suck. One was Justin Roiland, and in his case he got charged with domestic violence for an incident in 2020. He's pled not guilty, but at the same time it's like the person who's the defendant has been anonymous, so it's like a Jane Doe. But at the same time, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, you want to be charitable and not completely condemn people. At the same time, it's like, probably don't, you know, innocuously get charged with domestic abuse. So
yeah, it's pretty easy to not do that.
So that sucks. Also in the same week, if anybody watches Channel 5 News or All Gas No Breaks, Andrew Callahan, three people came out and made videos talking about of him being not having consent or not SA, but basically being very aggressive with pursuing people and like not taking an initial no for an answer, stuff like that. Basically all that stuff has been really shitty. It sucks that like people who are given positions of power, even though it's not something that's like elected position of power, which is even worse probably, still seem to be abusing that power. And then there's this weird intersectionality with like video games, and Justin Roiland put out a video game this year. I forget what it's called.
High on Life. His studio has done a bunch of stuff, especially in VR. High on Life, everybody can make their own judgment.
The Minions of video games.
I heard people say, it wasn't as excruciating as it looked, there was cool stuff. And also Tim Robinson plays one of the guns. Like, that's kind of neat. And the guy who wrote Mr. Boop, is on the team as the writer. It's a studio. It's not just Justin Roiland, but it's kind of the J.K. Rowling problem. We're like, fuck, I don't want to give him money.
Yeah, and I was going to bring that up as well with two different video examples coming up, which is, Hogwarts Legacy, which I looked more into this, like, hey, does she get any money from this? And it's, she does, because it's royalties, you're paying for the royalties for the franchise. And then the other one I was looking up was Atomic Heart that's coming out, where there's like mild controversy around that, where it's like, they haven't condemned the war in Russia. They said that they're pro-peace and that they're not going to comment on politics, which could be fine, but at the same time, it's like, it just sucks with all these things where it's like, can't we just get a good group of people to make a game and not like have to worry about their politics or not give them any power that they abuse, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it, I guess all this kind of goes back to what I call like the Chick-fil-A problem, where it's like, I don't support that company at all, but they make pretty good chicken. And so what am I supposed to do in that situation, you know? And so for the most part, it doesn't matter in Seattle because it's like they're not around here, so I don't need to worry about it. But
it's just. And like there are ongoing problems too, like some, you know, some of this, like especially the Royan thing. So it's been like an open secret in the animation industry for a while about him. You know, the fact that the incident on this took place in 2020 and we're kind of just hearing about it now. There have also, and this is again, allegedly, it, you know, whatever, whatever. There have been conversations where he's been sliding into like, where he had like allegedly been sliding into DMs of underaged fans and like just saying like real gross stuff, not just like sexually perving and things like that, but also like just racist and offensive stuff. And it's like, hey, you know what's super easy? Not sliding into fans' DMs.
I think it's kind of one of those things where if it's a person that you wouldn't be at all surprised if they did do it, there's probably a million other reasons to just stop supporting them before it gets to that point.
Yeah. I don't know. It's
you get so much choice in you know what you consume, and you could only consume the top 1% of content of stuff out there, like the really good, life changing, amazing stuff, and you still would be able to get to everything. So
this also sucks because, you know, just despite the fans, I've enjoyed the Rick and Morty I've seen. I watched the first three seasons.
Yeah,
you know, like I liked his performance as Lemon Grab on Adventure Time. Right. And just like, this is, that's not the tragedy of this. The tragedy is the people that he hurt.
The victims. You know?
Yeah. But just like, yeah, I don't know. It's another thing where like perfectly fine people can make very fucked up things, you know?
Yeah. Well, my point is more on the like, feeling like you need to tap dance around like allegedly, and we don't know whether he did or not. It's like, that's true, but there's a million other reasons to be like, fuck that guy.
I'm doing the allegedly thing just so people don't think I'm like being like soft-handed, like it's more just like a legal thing, more there's like a 0.00000 out to infinity one chance. It's just the done thing, but you know, my feeling is fuck this guy.
The Andrew Callahan one messes me up, where it's like, I legitimately believe he's one of the best journalists like alive today.
He's done really good work.
Yeah. And it's like, so obviously I wouldn't like be on his Patreon anymore, but then even it's like, okay, can I watch his videos? Because there is some, albeit small, like financial gain from that. And like, the idea is like, it's like, I do think he has good journalism. So it's like in a weird way, I don't want that to stop, but he shouldn't have any power and shouldn't like receive any power from it. So it's like, it sucks.
Yeah. I don't know. Values are expensive.
Yeah. Anyway, we can move on to less,
we can.
Terrible
we're just,
things.
We're going to do the other bummer. We're just going to rip this off. We're going to rip off the Band-Aid here. You did a pivot on me. Which one are you doing, David?
Yeah, I'm doing the zombies.
Okay, all right.
So the Washington Post published kind of an interesting article discussing the science behind the zombie fungus from The Last of Us show. Apparently it's based on something called cordyceps.
It's the famous sequence from Planet Earth where it makes the ant climb to the top of the grass. So
and apparently that was the sequence that inspired this. And what I didn't know is that apparently cordyceps have a lot of potential health and medical applications, and so show up in a bunch of like health supplements and stuff.
Oh,
I thought you were going to say, like, you know, why build the habit of working out when you just have a fungus force you to go work out?
Oh, I mean, that would be great.
They seem pretty strong in the game. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't target doesn't target humans because that's not part of its. It's not where it wants to be. I think it wants to be in the stomach of birds. Birds don't really eat us, and also it's going to be like ground up and powdered. Yeah.
Yeah, it also discusses how realistic is it that that the fungus is transmitted by zombie bites.
Mm-hmm.
And it points out that generally speaking, bites aren't how fungus is spread, mm-hmm. but that there are instances of fungus that spreads via like getting stuck with thorns.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Which is you can also get it by inhaling it, right? Because there's all these sequences in The Last of Us where there are spores.
So they also mentioned that that is true in the games, but not in the show, because they basically didn't want to have all these scenes where their highly paid actors were wearing gas masks, because it would be crazy to watch a show where Pedro Pascal spends the entire thing wearing a mask.
Good one.
So this jogged my memory. I think it would be sweet if it's like the you spread it by ingesting it or whatever, so you get a reverse zombie where they're like trying to make other people eat them. You know what I mean?
Fucking eat me.
No.
Just putting butter on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Put your hand in their mouth and punch their jaw.
Have this hot dog. Don't ask why I'm missing a finger.
Oh man. Yeah. Cordyceps is creepy. Any of those parasite things.
Yep.
Oh gosh. Okay. Now moving on to slightly better things. What did Wizards of the Coast back off on, Dennis?
Yeah. So this is a couple months in the making, but it kind of came to a head this week. Wizards of the Coast, makers of Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering and a whole bunch of other stuff, had tried to change the OGL, the Open Gaming License. This is kind of the license that all creators that leverage the gaming system and everyone who homebrews stuff, et cetera, and a whole bunch of variant tabletop RPGs that use 5e and other Dungeons and Dragons stuff as inspiration or a base. This is the license that allows people to do that. And so, there are a significant amount of people that they're living, their livelihood is based off of that, up to like megacorps like Paizo,
mm-hmm.
Which, megacorp in the world of tabletop role-playing games.
Yeah, megacorp, but everybody is dwarfed by wizards because of their literally printing money. Yeah.
In the presence of wizards, everyone has the dwarf traits. No, they got rid of dwarf-specific traits, right? Anyway. This license, I guess there was a draft that was leaked and that they've been kind of shopping around of a new license that had all of these trapdoors in it. Anyone with legal expertise looking at it was able to see that kind of just gave Wizards of the Coast a ton of power and ability to basically ruin the lives of anyone that they wanted who was making stuff inspired by or through Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm-hmm. To which I say, if you're going to monopolize, at least fucking have the courtesy to do it the right way and just buy out anybody who gets successful enough. That's what you used to do, wizards.
Right? Yeah. Oh, man. And so it was all kind of dressed up as, they had clauses that kind of extended their ability to have control of content beyond just their physical stuff. And it's like, well, we're trying to stop people from doing NFTs. You guys hate NFTs, right? So that's what this is about, when really it's far more wide reaching than that.
Yeah.
There was a license back thing in it where, like, if you make a character and that character is then, used by other people, you owe Wizards of the Coast, of the Coast royalties.
Which would have a huge impact on, actual play streamers.
Yeah, a Critical Role is kind of the main poster child for all of this.
Yeah.
Just as a prime example of something that is completely blown up. They've got a special on or a series on Prime that uses their characters.
Look, they have an official source book made by Wizards.
Yeah. and all of that is, you know, is basically Wizards with this new license trying to get a bigger piece of, trying to get more control over. And again, basically the gist of it is changing the license to give Wizards of the Coast infinitely more power to fuck over anyone they want that interacts with their stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are cases like there can and have been super racist variants of Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And this new license does give Wizards of the Coast more ability to address stuff like that.
Yeah.
However, it's just been done in such a way that it is far, far overreaching any purpose that could be noble.
It's weirdly like that is weirdly analogous to like domestic terrorism laws, which is like, no, we're totally doing these to like get rid of those like fucking racists who did like Jan 6. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, something should probably be done about them, but we don't really need new laws for that because this is just going to be used to go after like people on the left. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, mm-hmm. We're totally just going to go after, you know, those racist assholes. You hate them, right? You hate them like you hate NFTs, right? And it's like, we can see through this.
This is not as tricky as you think it is.
Yeah.
So anyway, the good news, the positive turn is the community immediately spotted this out as the bullshit it was incensed and eventually got Wizards of the Coast to back down, and they've announced, hey, we're not going to do this OGL reboot. We're figuring out what we're going to change. We're doing a complete redo. They tried to spin it as like, oh, really? We were just shopping around for your opinions.
When you make that face, I'm joking.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, there's still going to be some kind of change they're coming out with. It totally could be they're doing PR. And they're going to bulldoze people anyway. We'll see.
The poll quote at the top of this.
Yeah.
At the top of the article that you sent on Polygon. It's clear from the reaction that we rolled a one. No, you don't get to do that.
Yep. No, sorry. You don't get to be cute.
Yeah. No, we're taking dice rolls back from you. Have fun having a game without that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's great is, go ahead.
Is how they would have any legal ground to stand on to begin with.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, you know, so Paizo, oh, go ahead.
Like, I know it seems to me that like, if I want to publish a book of monsters, you know, it doesn't seem like they can do anything to keep me from publishing a stat block. Like I might not be able to say like, oh, and here's the rules for, you know, how attack of opportunity works or whatever, but I can say like, hey, it gets 3 attacks of opportunity.
Yeah. It's mechanics are almost impossible to trademark. Terminology is much more trademarkable. But that's, you know, that's where Paizo actually stepped in. Paizo and a coalition of other TTRPGs that have kind of stood on the shoulders of Dungeons and Dragons. It was basically like, hey, don't do this. Like, we are prepared to argue in court that there is no legal grounds for you being able to do this, that it's completely, you know,
it's predatory.
We'll not hold up. It's totally predatory. And they actually said, Paizo did, that they are going to publish their own, gaming license, mm-hmm. which, gotta give them style points, is the Orc. It's the open RPG contract, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that's low hanging fruit right there. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So by simply from branding, we might see a shift over to this new license.
Well, yeah. I've seen a lot of discussions that's basically said this will likely cause kind of that this could be good for the gaming community as a whole if this causes people to kind of switch away from this monoculture that there kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely true if that's there, but also, gosh, just D&D stuff is such a Rosetta Stone, you know, mechanically, mm-hmm. and even just like subject matter wise, that like there are so many derivative works that by their very existence, like even if they are being sold, like it redounds to everybody's benefit that they exist, mm-hmm. you know, just creatively and for the, you know, and for the fans. Yeah. For people who want that particular mix of storytelling and combat stuff, you know, yeah, it'd be neat, but also like, I really don't want legal hooks in for people who make stuff to be fucking swooped because they called something the wrong thing.
Yep. Well, and the crazy thing is, so they did this backpedal, and by the way, how's this for passive aggressive? They put like a postscript on their announcement that they were rolling back their plans, saying something like, I'm paraphrasing here, you know, you're going to see people crowing that they won and that we lost because the community forced us to change. And that's only half true. Really, we both won because, you know, we were going to do this all along. We want your feedback, yada, yada.
Hey, guess who doesn't get to decide who wins?
Yeah.
The person who lost.
Aaron Shanks, who is with Paizo, summed it up well. He said, "Hey Siri, what does gaslighting mean?"
Yeah,
and I think that's about the extent of it. So we'll see where it goes. It is cool to see that at least in this community, the community is savvy and not willing to put up with giant corporate BS.
Yeah, nice. So happy about that. And moving on from that, I would say good news to frivolous news. And maybe by the time you hear this, we know more details, but there may or may not be new Metal Gear projects in the pipeline. Mm. Obviously, sans Hideo Kojima. But this is like very firmly in like just rumor says territory, like voice actor who voices Raiden and also voices the most annoying character in Metal Gear Solid 5, Kaz, you know, Master Miller. He had posted something promoting a he posted a tweet promoting his new cameo page. And a fan, asked like, oh, you know, maybe this is an indication that there's something new happening. Maybe a Metal Gear Rising 2, you know, maybe a new, you know, just a Metal Gear showcase kind of thing coming up. And Quentin Flynn responded saying, stay tuned for things to be announced in the coming weeks. Winky face. That is all the information that we have, but it is interesting to think about this.
Do you think the title will be Revengeance?
Revengeance again. We're doing it. I don't know. It'd be cool to see a new Revengeance. I'd like a mainline kind of reboot or extension out of Metal Gear that doesn't involve Kojima, is interesting to me, you know, kind of definitely more interesting, having recently replayed Metal Gear Solid 5 and, you know, played Death Stranding and all that. Just it might be neat to see. So obviously coming weeks, who knows what that means? Who knows if this actually means what people are supposing, but it is a thing that happened. Yeah.
That's the good note to end on.
Yes. Ambiguity. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level number 443. Want to once again welcome Gwen as the producer. Remind everybody that at least for the next little bit, we're going to be posting the multiplayer prompts primarily on the Duckfeed community group. Just do a search for Duckfeed community. You'll see it there. And then we'll reevaluate how well that is working after a few weeks.
We'll have a duck feed society.
Yeah. just a civilization, galaxy spanning of a few thousand people at most. Is there anything I'm forgetting? You know, the usual stuff you can do to support the show on the network.
Don't think so.
All right. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can catch me streaming the rest, more Burnhouse Lane this weekend on Twitch, Duckfeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me atop the pinball leaderboards.
I'm David Meismith. I've got nothing witty to say.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I need to pull up my document. I have two.
Mm-hmm.
I have A Gamer's Day is Never Over. And I have A Horny Seesaw. I think both of those were Ben joints.
I think those are Ben interruptions, yep.
All right. Who else has one?
So I have two. I have You Can't Turn Off the Gen.
Is and that two wins?
Just one.
Okay.
And I have Cower Creep.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Dennis, what do you have?
So I had Cower Creep as well. I also had Five Horned.
Okay.
And then Horny Seesaw as well.
Okay. And Ben, what do you have?
I have nothing.
Okay. By laughs, it sounds like A Gamer's Day is Never Over, but also got laughs as A Horny Seesaw, and that had two. That had two votes.
I'm okay with either of those.
I got no preference.
I'd throw Behind the Seesaw, personally.
Okay, but that's our tiebreaker, A Horny Seesaw.
Bam.
Oh, also, point of order, the game next, last week that I couldn't remember the name of, but that I kept getting confused with Returnal, is apparently Callisto Protocol.
Yes. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Callisto Protocol. What is that?
It's a survival horror game that got panned for.
Oh, right. Yeah. Cause it was, that was in the Dead Space universe, right?
No, it just looked very much like a Dead Space game.
It was made by the game director of Dead Space though. Oh. I think there is a connection there, but maybe not narratively, but
yeah, that's a shame. All right. It is decided.